Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Alana Levine. If you know me, you know how obsessed I am with live performance. To me, nothing replaces being in a theater and the lights going down and the orchestra starts to play and that first moment of magic. And I know the way I feel about theater, some people feel about sports or opera or dance or comedy or food. And what if there was a place that you could go and find out which live events are going on near you that night? And then for a discount price, you can get off your couch, put down that clicker, and experience the magic that is live performance. Well, there is a place, goldstar.com. You just go to that website, you type in your city, and every amazing live event will be listed at discount prices. Theater, dance, comedy, film, food, concerts, sports. No more staying home. You are going to go out and build memories and experiences that expand your mind and heart through live performance with GoldStar.com. GoldStar is in 26 cities around the country with over 8 million members already signed up to find out what event is going on near you. So go to GoldStar.com. Get out of your house and build memories that are magic for you and your family. Expand your mind, expand your hearts. Go see live performance by using GoldStar.com. Tell them Alana sent you.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Okay, I'm going to try to put into words the experience I had tonight in seeing Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Stephen Adly Gurgis's play, Halfway Bitches Go Straight to Heaven, that's currently at the Atlantic Theatre Company, and a co-production between the Labyrinth Theatre Company and Atlantic, two of New York's most extraordinary theatre companies. Halfway Bitches Go Straight to Heaven is a play that centers on a woman's halfway house in New York City. Characters inhabit this play that feel like people you know, people you see on the streets every day in New York, the way these stories are interwoven with such beauty and pain, suffering and redemption. It really is one of those plays that I know I will be thinking of, not just for days to come, but for years to come. He is one of these writers that is able to move you, make you laugh, and you're gutted all at the same time. So it is a commitment seeing this play. It's it demands a lot of you, but it gives you so much in return. So go see Halfway Bitches Go Straight to Heaven at the Atlantic Theater. So go to atlantictheater.org for more information about the play and for tickets. And then I hope you'll email me at littleknownfactspodcast@gmail.com. Let me know what you think of the play.
Hey, I heard you needed inspiration. Here's Alana and friends with some revelations. Little known fact of the day. Every little thing's gonna be A-OK.
Hey everyone, welcome back to my conversation with the great actor Willie Garson. When we left off, he was starting to tell us about how he had originally met Sarah Jessica Parker a lifelong friend, and we all know them as Stanford and Carrie from Sex and the City. So here we go. Part two of Willie Garson.
A-OK. A-OK.
So all of this leads me to ask, did you have to audition for Sex and the City? Or
I did
she...
audition. I didn't know that she had anything to do with it.
Okay.
And I went to the, I went to Network, which is the last audition before you get a show. Mm-hmm. So you go, I went to HBO and I showed up and I was the only person for that part, which is really great because it's always three.
Yeah.
So I was the only person. So that's awesome. And the girls in the waiting room who were auditioning for Samantha, Charlotte, and Miranda were sitting around talking in the waiting room. And then one of them said, oh, to another one, she goes, oh, do you know who they're talking about for Carrie? I hear they're talking to Sarah Jessica Parker. Mm-hmm. And I'm like,
Right.
I'm like,
right.
What?
Scooby?
So I leave the audition and I call Sarah and I'm like, what? Tell me about Sex and the City. She goes, oh, I might do it. I don't know. She goes, why? What do you know about it? And I said, I think I'm playing the part of Stanford.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, oh, really? I'm like, yeah. She goes, I don't know. I mean, doing a TV show is so hard. They write terrible things about you. They say that I look horrible and they're just so mean.
Yeah.
All the critics and all the fans.
Do I want to take that on?
And she goes, but it's good, right? And I said, yeah, I think it's good. So I like to say that I made her do it, which is not true.
I think she was leaning against it and you had her.
Yeah,
she leaned
Let's
into
go
it.
With that story.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true.
You were like one, a little more honey.
But
to
it was great.
The pot.
But I'll tell you, and it was the first shot of the first episode was us together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it really brought something to it. I mean, because she would, you know, she'd reach over and slap my bald head and stuff. You know, that
you
she wouldn't
friends.
Do with some actor that she would was cast.
Probably
you know?
Not. It
I mean, she's
a
she's a damn good actress, so she would make that relationship.
Yeah.
But we had that relationship.
Yeah.
So I think it really breathed on the show. Like,
do you feel like that part changed your career?
It did change my career because it was big. It was really successful.
And went on for a long time.
It went on for a long time, and it was just a whole different world. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had done another show, and it was not successful. And I had done a pretty good run on NYPD Blue, which mm-hmm. Which is a successful show, mm-hmm. but it didn't have the cultural explosion like this show did. So yeah, it made things a lot different mm-hmm. for sure. Other than financially.
Right. You know. You lost money on that one.
I lost money.
It was worth it.
But it was worth
all
it.
All that
yeah.
flying back and forth.
Yep.
Well, when I...
They didn't have Spirit Airlines then.
Not yet.
So, yeah.
One of the greatest things that happened to you was, by all accounts, learning about an organization that sets up people who want children with children who need parents.
Yeah.
And that happened to you in like 2008-ish? When did you get involved and when did you go, wait a minute?
Well, I had been raising money. I'd been doing fundraising for an organization called the Alliance for Children's Rights, which is in Los Angeles. And they don't do adoptions, but they do all the legal work for adoptions.
Okay.
So it's like the last thing. And it at the time, it cost about $1,000, which people hadn't budgeted for, all the mm-hmm. paperwork, doing all the stuff at the court. And I thought it was a really great organization.
And someone came to you and they were like, Willie,
would you come to a fundraiser? Uh-huh. And I did. And they're like, oh, would you come to another one? And would you talk about it? And so I did.
Right.
I just really liked it a lot. And then I was seeing someone in Los Angeles. And she didn't want to have a child, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens when you date, you know, models and actresses. It
right.
happens all the time. And I was really broken up about it. And I was like 43 or something. And I thought, you know, I really don't care if I never get married, but I really care if I never have a kid.
You always wanted to be a parent.
Yeah. I'd been a big brother. Yep. I'd been a camp counselor. I'd helped with my nephews raising them.
It was in
them.
Your DNA.
Yeah. I just really like kids, you know, because I think a lot of ways, in the corniest possible way, I think we weren't really allowed to be kids that much in our house. Mm-hmm. And so, like, childhood is something that I think is important and magical, and it's limited. You know, no one says, oh, I wish I was a child for less time.
Right.
When they get older.
That's right.
So when that was done, I was like, oh, how do I get, maybe I'll just get a kid. Mm-hmm. So I called up the Alliance and said, what if I wanted a kid? And they said, wow, that's a, okay, you can. Mm-hmm. I said, I have no idea how to do that. And they said, well, there's these two agencies that we work with that we like.
And being a single dad is at that time was
no one cared, right. Really, and it wasn't a fame thing, just no one cared,
right?
And you know, and I'd read an article in Los Angeles that Los Angeles had more kids in the foster system ready to go than anywhere in the country.
Okay,
so there's a lot of kids. I know there are a lot of kids available. Mm-hmm. And there was something to say, God bless people who do it a different way. Mm-hmm. You know, I get it,
right?
But I just thought, why not do it locally
in my own town
and through the county? Like, right. It's done. Like, people do it.
Sure.
So they set me up with the nonprofit agency, and I started the process. And I just thought, oh, I'll just go along until I don't.
Right.
And I'll see if I want to do this. So there's parent training. I think it's 40 hours, mm-hmm. I think you have to do. And then they do your house training. And you're, what's that called? Where they say your house is okay. They check your house.
Okay.
Certification.
Okay.
They certify your house and you get your personal certification and then you wait and see what's up.
So how heavily vetted are you?
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
So looking back, you feel like other than them not understanding that all the throw pillows on the couch they were sitting on were stolen.
That's right. That's right.
Other than that.
And my collection of broken glass.
They got those two things they swept under the rug.
Yeah.
All right. So you're like, it's an intense period of time where you're really like.
And you're prepared for anything.
Yeah.
You're not prepared for any specific child.
Right.
So like you do,
for example. It could be an infant. It could be a teenager. Like
it
whatever.
It could be an infant. So, you know, outlet plugs.
Got it.
It can be if they do a whole session on parent training on if you get a black girl and
hair. You're a white guy.
Well, right. And hair.
Right.
Like hair is a big thing.
Yeah.
So I know all about it.
Yeah.
Like how to do it.
Yeah.
So you're prepared and then you're stamped. You're ready.
You've been approved and you're in the approved pile.
And then you can always, if there is a match that comes up, you can always say no. Mm-hmm. No judgment, whatever, for any reason.
And are you specific, like, I'm looking for, I would like.
So this is what I said. I said to my social worker, 3 to 5 years old.
Male or female?
That's it.
Right.
That was my thing, 3 to 5 years old.
Right.
Because everyone wants infants. So I just thought 3 to 5 would be great because then you have like a year or so together before any kind of school starts, mm-hmm. and, you know, for bonding, and then school starts and then I'm on my own. So fine. You know, time was going by and I was like, all right, well, what's going to happen? And finally she called me and said, listen. Oh, and here's the other thing I said. I'm not a good enough person to be a foster parent, that the kid is going to be taken away from me. Mm-hmm. So I need a kid that is pretty much cut and dry, ready for adoption.
Right.
Which is not a thing.
Well,
they're
foster
all foster
care
kids.
Is, yeah. It's so about at any, at trying any, to work it out with the
at
biological
any point,
family.
Parent could get out of jail or mm-hmm. get their crap together and like be given to the parent.
Right.
And they said, okay, well, that's going to take some time.
Right.
Because that's rare. So finally she called me after about 6 months and said, you should go to an adoption fair. And I went to an adoption fair, which was like the worst place I've ever been in my life.
What is that?
It's I mean, as horrible as it sounds, but it's true. It's like a pet fair. And you are walking around. They make stupid little games for the kids to play, but they know what they're doing there.
Right.
And they all have name tags and their age, and they have numbers underneath if they have siblings, because they like to keep them together. And then you walk around with a clipboard and write down kids you're interested in. And it was brutal. And
I can't believe they...
And they're up to 15, 16 years old.
Do you
So you see the kid, you see the kid who would be thought of as unattractive or overweight or whatever, and that no one... And they've been to 50 of these, and they know that they're not getting picked. So like at a horrible singles bar at 2 o'clock, you don't make eye contact with those kids.
Right.
And that, it was so brutal. Because you want to get all of them.
A system that needs to change.
Well,
I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is either. It's brutal. It's brutal.
Not good.
I met Nathan there.
Right. So how did that happen?
I saw him. I talked to him. I stalked him all day.
What was he doing?
Well,
and
first,
how old was he?
First, he was seven or seven and a half almost, which was older than I wanted. But he was very tiny. I thought he was like five.
Okay.
And first I saw him, he was balancing against a curb, walking.
On his own. Not hanging out with other kids.
Like totally like plugged in. I'm like, okay, I love that kid.
And he's got great balance.
Great balance, right? Which is
great. To drive the circus with
for
you.
For my condition. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
And then I've told this story before. He was painting a piggy bank. That one of the things they had to do.
Right. That was the arts and crafts project.
So they had like a ceramic whale or something he was painting. And he was painting it blue and red. And this is my first actual contact with him. So I lean in and I go, that's great. And he looks up and like, who is this weird bald guy with the overly hip glasses?
Really enthusiastic about my piggy bank.
I go, are those two colors, blue and red, are those the only colors you're going to paint it? And he looks at me like I'm a lunatic. And he goes, that's the only colors they have? And I said, you know, if you mix blue and red together, you get purple. And he literally looks at me like I have a horn coming out of my and I'm like, I'm not kidding. Yeah. Try it. And his social worker is standing behind, and she sees me, and she recognizes me. She knows who I am. And she goes, Mr. Garson. I turn, and I go, tell me about this kid. And she tells me about the kid. And, you know, great, amazing story. And he's an amazing survivor, and he's really been through it. And I go back to the table, and Nathan, like they're planning the break from Sing Sing later that evening, he literally is telling the kids at the table, like, hey, guys, if you mix blue and red, you get purple. Like, hey guys, listen to me here.
Yeah,
like
I just found out where the keys are. Yeah.
And I thought,
keep digging.
This kid is a shyster.
Right.
He would steal a desk lamp from a dressing room.
Yeah,
I thought, this
he's
kid,
my guy.
This kid's awesome.
Yeah.
So then I got to my car. I burst out crying. I found two other kids because you had to write three kids on your
clipboard piece of paper.
I circled his name. I put stars around it, arrow like a middle school
diary. It's
Valentine's
Day.
A middle school girl's diary.
Yeah.
This is the kid. This is my kid. And I get in the car. I burst out crying because I can't even imagine. Well, what about – there's not enough parents there.
Right.
What about the other kids? Like, I'm like, I can't even believe this is happening. I call my social worker. It's a Saturday. She's not there with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm literally shaking, crying. And she's like, we sat on the phone for a while. She gets me to breathe and calm down. And I said, I met my kid. You have to get me this kid. She goes, okay, I'll get into it on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
She calls me Monday afternoon, says, there's a problem. Seven families want Nathan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, ugh. So what does that mean? And why would they go with me? Single father.
Right.
Travels all over the planet to work. What the hell? She goes, well, you know, his social worker has to meet with each family social worker, and it's a county social worker. So as long as that takes.
Yep.
So I sat at my desk literally for a month and a half, chain smoking. And then one day she called me and said, guess what? They're going play date with you. They want to move ahead with you.
So you didn't meet his social worker. Your social worker met with his social worker.
Right.
Okay. So, you, so you're has, out of it.
So, so his social worker and her boss have all of his file, which for him, he'd been in six, seven homes. Mm-hmm. You know, so he had a huge file. And then my social worker meets with them with my file all my training and my certification and talk about everything that they know about me. And they decided to go ahead with a play date.
And where does that happen?
We went to play the mini golf place that was in Karate Kid. Mm-hmm. That's where we went.
And do you choose what you're going to do, or did they set it up for you?
Well, I talked to his social worker, and we say, I said, what? And she says, well, people, you can do anything. Mm-hmm. I said, I don't know, to roller skate.
Right.
I said, movie. She goes, well, that's not a good idea because you're not really talking.
Right.
I said, well, what about just like miniature golf, like arcade place? She goes, oh, yeah, that would be great. I said, oh, there's one near, he was living in Whittier, and there's one near there that's really famous from Karate Kid. I said, let's go to that one. She goes, that's great.
Yeah.
You know,
and you're like, also, I'm bringing Ralph Macchio. Is
that's
that
right.
Is that weird at all?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Well, my case is more Pat Morita, but whatever.
Exactly.
And then we, next one, we rode scooters, kick scooters, and went for ice cream. Next one.
And is he doing this with other people at the time? Or
no,
just
no, no, no.
You?
Once they decide.
Once you're vetting.
Because they don't want to confuse the
got
kid.
Got it. So just you.
And then so you start doing it. Then they, I guess they speak to the kid.
Does he know what's happening?
Not really, mm-hmm. but
and he's
somewhat.
Little anyway.
I think she said to him, I've asked him about this. She says to him, did you like Willie? Mm-hmm. And he said, yeah, he's awesome. And she's like, would you like to see him again? Mm-hmm. And he said, yes. Mm-hmm. So then, and then it becomes.
And
whatever.
When this is happening, is he living with a foster family?
He's
or
in
is
a foster
he in a
family.
Group home?
He's in a foster family that has six kids.
Of their own or foster kids?
Six foster kids. She's a bad person. She has six. She's a professional foster mother.
Right.
She's never adopted any of them. She's doing it for the check.
Okay.
Yeah. She was bad and bad to the kids. Mm-hmm. And then by the third time, he was in, and which made me feel like I was terrified.
Yeah.
And but, I drive up for our play date, and they had curtains in their front window.
At the foster home?
Yeah. And I'd drive up and I'd see him quickly. So he'd been standing there.
Waiting.
And I'd go in and say to the foster mother, I'd be like, how long has he been standing there? She goes, 2 hours.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God. And I just fell in love with him. He's so, everyone's kids are special, but I can say that because I had nothing to do with it. Mm-hmm. He came to me special.
Right. So he was how old? So after visits.
Yes, yeah, so three visits. Then
how
we
quickly
get
till
then
he
we
can
start
stay
then we
with
start
you.
Going on play dates alone.
Okay.
Staying there.
Yep.
So around Whittier.
Yep.
And then they set a date, a move-in date, and they work backwards from that. So the week before the move-in date, he's going to spend the weekend. The week before that, he's going to spend one night. Mm-hmm. So We did the move-in day. It was February 20th, and it was my birthday. Mm-hmm. It was a Friday. It was move-in day. So I was going to pick him up after school with all his crap, and he was going to move in.
And how much stuff does he have?
He had stuff. He had a good amount of clothing. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because the charity that Nathan works with now called Bags for Kids – when they move from house to house, they move in hefty bags, mm-hmm. which so subconsciously says to them,
what a disgusting metaphor.
You are garbage. Yeah. Your stuff is garbage.
Right.
You're disposable.
Yeah.
So there's a charity called Bags for Kids that gives them luggage. He started a chapter at his school mm-hmm. in California, and, I had 30 pieces of luggage under my bed that
right.
I haven't used in 10 years.
Right.
And we got the first year.
All stolen.
All stolen, of course.
They all have different show
names
on it.
Yeah. Great.
There's lots of kids
great job,
running around.
LA Law.
yes.
Welcome to the practice.
Exactly.
But
And Mr. Belvedere.
I mean, the first year at his school, which is, you know, an expensive private school with rich people, so I get it, but we did over 700 bags.
So the day he moves in, on your birthday.
The day he moved in.
February 20th.
The day he moved in, I called my old girlfriend and I said, what in holy hell have I done? Mm-hmm. He's in the next room. Mm-hmm. I have no idea. And she was like, just go watch a movie with him. Mm-hmm. Go, you know, teach him how to play solitaire. Mm-hmm. Teach him how to play gin, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. And it was amazing. But, you know, at this point, you know, the physical was very interesting because I hadn't touched him. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if I was supposed to hug him when I said goodbye or right. whatever. So he did it.
Okay.
On the third or fourth play date.
He hugged you.
Yeah. And then he was aware that it was happening. And then he moved in. Mm-hmm. Now, we had almost a year until the adoption. So we still had visitation with his birth mother and his sisters who are adopted elsewhere.
Okay.
So we would all meet in a park once a month. But he was living with me and going to school.
Did he switch schools when he moved in with you?
He left that school on Friday, February 20th. He started at the school in our neighborhood on Monday, February mm-hmm. 23rd.
Yep.
And he would say, my dad, my father. But he never – no, no. He wouldn't say. He would say Willie. Mm-hmm. Then we were at a play date. He had been living with me for about 4 months. Mm-hmm. We're at a play date with his family, with his birth mother and his sisters. And they're all Mexican-American. They don't really speak a lot of English and me.
Right.
And so it's pretty strange situation, weird in a park, you know, the whole deal. Anyway, halfway through that play date, he starts screaming, Daddy, Daddy! And coming up and hugging me like whenever I was not paying attention mm-hmm. to him. And again, subconscious, it was in front of his mother. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I have one. Mm-hmm. I have one. I know what he was doing. And I can only think that it was killing her, which makes me feel badly.
Right.
But anyway, that was the first time he called me dad. And it was weird.
And did it stick?
It did stick. And then about 2 years into having him, after the adoption was complete the following January, he just settled on Pops. I don't know what he saw.
Well,
if he saw
have
a
you
movie,
met you?
I mean, maybe he saw it in a movie or something yeah. or whatever. I think the kid in Boyhood calls Ethan Pops.
Okay.
Maybe, which he loved. He probably watched that movie 26 times.
Wow. Yeah. A long movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me about it. Yeah. So I had to watch it
I'll
too.
Be right back, honey.
Yeah. 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 But it, you know, it's been amazing and he's like me and he is like himself and he's strong and, college has been,
he's a freshman.
There's so much in foster kids that's so ingrained in them that it takes years to get out of them being separate. Being the other kid, because you're just going to go to another school anyway.
Right.
Being temporary. Oh, I'm doing badly in that class, so I'll just drop it.
Like,
you know, I mean, just the temporariness of everything. And it wasn't until senior year in high school that he really kind of blossomed and came into his own. These are my friends. This is my house. This is my life. I'm going to take ownership of who I am.
This is not temporary.
Right. And now he started college last month, and he's awesome. He's on the tennis team. He has a girlfriend, and he's got a job. And
so, how
did
you
drop one class?
Well,
but that's okay. That happens freshman
year. We all
year,
do that
all the time,
regardless.
He's
of
taking
how
it next semester.
Okay,
it's all fine.
So now you're an empty nester.
Yeah, which is weird and sad, but. Not as devastating as I'm seeing it on other people. And I think that's mainly because I never work at home. Mm-hmm. So I've always traveled through the whole time. While we talk every day, we had always been apart. We spend so much time apart.
Was he a set kid? Would he come?
He would come. you know, when he was off school.
Right.
He acted on White Collar.
Yeah.
I wrote him a scene. He was amazing. But yeah, he would come to set, but no interest at all.
So let me ask you something. This is such a big jump, but I know that on White Collar, you started directing television. Had you been directing television before that?
No.
And is that something that you got into your contract or just over time you were like, I've been doing this
I just never shut up about it. I wanted to do it very badly. And it's a lot easier if it's your own show.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't to launch my brilliant directing career. It was just I was going to make a better episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. So that was great. I couldn't get one in the last season. They didn't have enough space.
Right.
We did a short last season. So then the only other thing I've directed on television was I wanted to learn how to do four-camera situation comedy, which I really kind of found out was really not my thing. But I did it. It's really like a short play in a lot of ways, and then the camera guys
covers all of it. Yeah,
I mean, what are you shooting at? You have four cameras. You're shooting whenever anyone's talking.
Right.
There's no fade in. There's
but you figure that out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I figured out, well, this is not my thing really. But that episode was nominated for an Emmy.
What was that? So
it was a kid's show called Girl Meets World.
Mm-hmm.
It's on Disney.
Kids watched it, loved it.
And it was a great episode. It was a serious episode. It wasn't a jokey episode.
Yeah.
It was a dramatic episode and about autism. And so that was pretty cool. And then now I'm going to direct an independent movie.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my next thing. Basically, just because I want to tell the story.
Right.
In my next show, if I'm fortunate enough to have another show, I will ask to direct an episode just because I like it.
Yeah.
But it's a... I just think it's just another, again, it's just another angle of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my interest in it, really. It's just another way to tell a story.
Before you go, do you have an audition story that you can share that maybe at the time was upsetting? But now in retrospect, you can see maybe the humor in it. Does anything come in mind? Like if you were on a panel of like audition stories.
Oh my God. I mean,
I know there are.
I've worked for so long.
Treasure
There's
trove.
So many of them.
Does one pop into your head?
I mean, the first thing when you said it, but it ended up with a happy ending.
It can have a happy. It's not about an unhappy ending. It's the story.
Yeah. Well. You know, when I first moved to California, I was so anxious to get work, and I was worried. So I made a deal with my father.
Okay.
I graduated college a year early, and so I said, "Okay, I was a shyster."
Sure.
Of course, I was making a deal.
Yeah, you know, so Willie, if you mix blue and red, you get
so
purple.
I said, "Okay, I graduated early. Wesleyan is expensive. So let's cut a deal. Give me $1,000 a month for 12 months.
Right.
I think Wesleyan was about $25,000 or $30,000 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So he's saving money.
Still a savings.
And I could live on that. And, you know, plus bartending jobs and whatever. But I could get by on that in California, which was cheap at the time to live there. I probably auditioned. I'd gotten my card to being an extra in New York, but I never got a real part on a commercial. I had auditioned probably for 10,000 commercials in New York. I think maybe once I was put on a veil. Maybe.
It's the best feeling.
Okay.
Yeah.
I get to California and I get a commercial agent, a junky one.
Mm-hmm.
And I go on an audition for Le Tigre Sportswear, which is like cheap Lacoste.
Sure.
It's a tiger.
Little orange tiger.
It's a tiger instead of an alligator.
Yeah.
And
but from far away, who can tell the
exactly.
difference?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you don't know that you bought that at Kmart. And so I go to the audition, and it was dancing to rock music straight into the camera. And I did it, and I get a call. You got a call back. I'm like, oh my God, I've never had a I've never had a callback. Like, amazing. This is the most exciting thing ever. I get there early because I go every place early. Mm-hmm. And I get there and there's no one there yet. And they come in. The casting woman comes in and she sees me sitting there and she goes, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "I'm here for my callback, like for Le Tigre." And she goes, "You didn't get a callback." I said, "What are you talking about?" She goes, "Yeah, you're with Leanna Levy. Like, yeah, you didn't get a callback. You should go home. You're not here." I literally started crying. I started crying. I go to the payphone and I call the agency and I'm like, "Why did you do this to me? I didn't get a callback and I put my whole day together so that I could come to this callback. I was so excited." While I'm on the phone, the director and the agency producers are walking through and the director sees me and goes, "Oh, it's so great to see you. I can't wait to see you inside. I'm glad you could make it."
What?
For your callback.
What?
I swear to God.
Oh, my God.
I swear to God. And I got it. And I got the commercial.
Yes, you did.
Yes, I did. This is my first commercial. My first commercial.
And so you were dancing?
Yeah.
In the commercial also?
Yeah.
And it happened?
Yeah.
And it aired?
Oh, yeah.
And you got paid?
Residuals. Yeah. Yeah.
So when you walk back in...
Most of the nightmarish audition stories, I mean, there's a very big director. I've won from film.
Yeah.
That I'll tell you.
Yeah.
It's a very big director. Fancy, fancy director. I won't say who it is. Mm. And he was making a movie, and he's an asshole. Everyone knows he's an asshole. He's famous for being an asshole.
Not the one you went to college with.
No, although he's rough.
Yeah.
And then, so I go in for the movie, and he's looking at my resume. He doesn't know who I am or anything. He shouldn't have. I wasn't famous or anything. He looks and he goes, being John Malkovich. He goes, "What'd you play in that?" I said, "I played this guy who's obsessed with Malkovich, and we improvised this scene because I'm friends with Spike Jonze," and he asked John and I just to do that. He goes, "Hold on a second. You're friends with Spike Jonze?" I said, "Yeah, he's one of my closest friends." "Really? Because I'm incredibly good friends with Spike Jonze." I said, "Oh, that's great." He had done a movie with Spike Jonze, by the way, this guy. And I go, great. So anyway, he goes, "So hold on a second. If I picked up the phone right now and called Spike Jonze, he would say that he's friends with you." I'm like, "Yeah, why would he not?" And it became that. That was what my meeting was about. And it was a snotty meeting. I read. I was fine, whatever. Next thing I know, I leave. I'm put on a veil for the movie. I didn't get it later. But it was like, what? He hated me.
Right.
He hated me. He was angry at me.
And you I was friends actually with Spike. Hated him.
Yeah.
So the point is, the things that we think we understand, I'm going to deduce from this experience that I will never see this person again. And then they're like, putting your headshot up on the wall as a possible casting.
Which is amazing because I've seen him at like Vanity Fair party or something, and he's been like totally pleasant to me.
Right. Who is it again?
I can't tell you. The only other one I'll tell you is a commercial. Yeah. It was a commercial callback for Diet Soda. And the gag of the commercial was the guy at the party is not drinking the diet soda, and he takes one sip and he's got underneath a fat suit that pops.
Explodes.
Right. So literally anyone can do it. There's no lines or anything. Although I did a lot of soda commercials. I'm very good at drinking soda.
Oh, good.
Like I look really good
drinking
soda.
Little known fact.
Yeah, little known fact.
Yeah.
So we go to the callback and there's like 100 people for the callback. It's like, really? Pick one. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter.
Right.
And
who fits in the suit?
And they're late. Uh-huh. They're like 2 hours late. We're in SAG audition
overtime
pay.
Now. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was ridiculous. We go in. I finally get called in, like literally 2 hours after my time.
Right.
I go in and you stand on a line, you turn to your right, you turn to the left, and then the snotty English director goes, "So, tell me about your training." I'm like, "I'm sorry, for what?" "Your acting training." I'm like, "Oh, I studied at the School of Soda Drinking for commercial audition
in a
school
fat suit."
Yeah. He goes, "Well, you don't have to be snotty." I'm like, "Yeah, I do. This is what you're wasting people's time with? Right. You still have 40 people waiting
right.
out there.
You're ridiculous.
What are you doing? Yeah. Like, are you out of your mind?" And he's like, "Well, you don't have to be a jerk about it." I said, "Yeah, I kind of do.
Yeah.
Because people's time is valuable and they're here to actually get a job." And whatever. I leave. Half hour later, I'm booked. Booked for the commercial. I get on set. I know his name. I'm not going to say his name.
Oh my God.
I get on
Michael Bay?
No. No, he's a director for Ridley Scott's company.
Okay.
I get on set. So he's a fancy English
yes.
some video guy.
Yes.
And I get on set. I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Why?
Right.
And B, why am I here?
Yeah.
And he goes, "Of all those people, you were the only one who finally showed some personality in the room."
Like, maybe
and I'm
it
like,
was anger.
"Is that what you had to do?
That
like
was
that? That was your point?"
That was it.
I said, "Okay, so now I do what? I sip the soda and the fat suit explodes. Great. Let's get on with it."
With your training,
yeah.
and your certification from drinking soda acting.
My
school.
My deep training at Bob's commercial training.
Willie Garson, I just have to tell you, on behalf of the planet, thank you for two things. Being, I'm not going to cry, but I kind of want to. You're such a loyal friend.
Oh, excited.
And I have felt your friendship and support wherever you are emailing me from, all these many years. And I cannot tell you how much it means to me.
Oh, that's very sweet.
And so that's the personal. The global is your work has made people so happy for truly decades. And that's an extraordinary thing. To bring that kind of integrity and passion and seriousness to every single job, whether it was a money job, whether it's a guy drinking a Coke in a fat suit, but like literally, like the integrity with which you work. And I think aside from being likable, the reason you are a repeat offender on the films of so many people and television shows is your work ethic is extraordinary. And the things you do for charities all over the world with the kind of fun that you bring to it, even when it's really hard subject matter, has just been really inspiring to me. So I get to say that out loud on my podcast. It's really the only reason I started this show is that I could finally have you in here and tell the world how grateful I am that you are on this planet with us. So thank you.
Thank you for having me. And I've been really blessed and I take it very seriously. So
yeah.
Thank
well,
you
I
for
love
that.
You very much.
Thank you. I love you too.
Clouds can make the wind blow. Bugs can make the grass grow. So there you go.
Hey, I am so excited to share some news with you guys. For the last few months, I've been working on another project that I've been calling Little Known Facts 2.0, Stage Network, an incredible new streaming platform which promises to be Netflix for theater lovers, asked me to do Little Known Facts as a filmed series, a talk show, as it were, in front of cameras. And I really thought about it for a long time because the thing that's made this podcast so special is that all of my guests have been able to share deep, intimate truths about their lives because we are in this tiny, comforting confessional that is the podcast booth. And I really had to think hard, could I still deliver the same kind of intimate, raw, hilarious, and unique interviews if cameras were involved? But I think I figured it out. I created a really beautiful set with very little technology around to distract me or my guest. And somehow through the miracle that is modern technology, where cameras can be really far away and capture really intimate moments at the same time, we've done it. And I'm so grateful to Stage Network for allowing me to make my dream of sharing incredible friends with you in this whole new way. So I shot 6 episodes. The first one is with Ben Platt. Other guests include Celia Keenan-Bolger, Zachary Quinto, George Salazar, Nikki M. James, John Slattery, and on and on and on. And I cannot tell you how thrilled I am to share them with you. Stage Network really is an amazing place. Not only is it filled with incredible original content, it has licensed so much theater-related content, documentaries and films and all sorts of incredible programming. I feel like I dreamed up a network and someone else created it, and here it is. And the fact that I'm involved in even a small way with this incredible, incredible network is just truly an honor. So, to that end, to watch all of the content, including Little Known Facts, the series, go to watchstage.com. You can start your free trial today, but you guys, it is only $4 a month if you sign up in earnest. That is nothing when you think of what you're going to get for it. I can't believe this place exists. I can't believe Little Known Facts is a film series. I will continue to do my podcast every week for you, but it is really exciting to go on this whole new adventure with you. So go to watchstage.com. That's watch, W-A-T-C-H, stage.com. Enjoy, and I hope you like it. Hey everyone, new episodes of Little Known Facts drop every Monday, and you can find them on your favorite podcast provider. Also, if you go to the website, littleknownfactspodcast.com, you'll find behind-the-scenes photos, videos, and interviews, and lots more on the gallery page. And if you are loving these intimate, candid conversations with all the artists who come on the show, please head over to the contributions page. I depend on these donations to continue to bring you these interviews every week. So if you love the show, please donate. Little Known Facts is edited by Nicholas Klar and recorded in New York City.
Life's better with American Family Insurance, because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.